Hey everybody, this is Jim David and welcome to my podcast again. It is September the 1st, 2012, and I have a real treat for you today. I got to interview one of the funniest acts I have ever seen, ever. Her name is Miss Richfield 1981. That would be the winner of the Richfield, Minnesota beauty contest 30 years ago. And she travels all over the country doing this act. And she is a completely clueless, racist character. But the audience loves every word that comes out of her mouth. If you ever get a chance to see Miss Richfield, you really have to grab it because it's just a scream. In this interview, the first half of it, I talked to Miss Richfield herself. And then in the second half, which is really cool, Miss Richfield drops her persona and becomes the man who created her, Russ King. And we get to talk to Russ himself about how he created the character and how it came to be and all of that stuff. Most of the time, when you interview a person who performs as a persona, they usually don't drop the character. But Russ was nice enough to take us behind the mask. And so this is really interesting. But it's also completely hilarious. It's funny, I just realized I've been doing these podcasts for almost a year. And I really want to thank all of you for listening. And I want to thank you for all your emails. I want to thank you for buying my book, You'll Be Swell, for supporting me in comedy clubs. I'm just really grateful. And one of the reasons I started doing these podcasts, as I said in my first interview with Pam Ann almost a year ago, is that I know a lot of really fascinating people, and I really want to bring them to you. It's really an honor and a privilege to have met all of these people in my life. I am very grateful for it. So many of my friends are just such gems that I felt like I had to share them with the world. And by the way, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you just go to iTunes and type in Jim David's Icons, you can subscribe to them and they'll come to you automatically. I'm going to keep doing them whenever I have the chance and whenever I find people who will talk to me. Usually, it's not that difficult because most people love to talk about themselves, but it's really hard sometimes to find a time to sit down and talk. I have a couple of really fabulous people who have said, yes, I want to do your podcast, and then we've just never been able to make it work, but I'm going to keep doing it. So today, enjoy my interview with Miss Richfield. Hey, this is Jim David. I am here with Miss Richfield 1981. Now, that would be the winner of, I believe, the Miss Richfield Minnesota beauty contest. Is that it?
Thank you, Jim. Yes, as a matter of fact, it is the winner of a very important and prestigious beauty competition. And actually, we called it a scholarship pageant because the gal who won that year did get a two-week stint at the Lakeland Dental Academy. And so, unfortunately, as the winner, I did get that two-week stint. And at the end of the first week, I grabbed the epoxy instead of the fluoride and cemented a woman's mouth shut. And so it was a shame that... anyway, I still get a card and flowers from her husband every year. It's very strange. I mean, you know, to be appreciated like that. But actually, I was crowned Miss Richfield, and it just really, Jim, it was the start of my career, because it was in Richfield, Minnesota, and I know everyone probably knows where that is, but...
I have no idea.
Well, I'm pointing to the map now, so everyone should be able to see where this is located. It's right in the heart of Minnesota, and actually, it's where the international airport is. Have you ever flown through Minneapolis?
I have indeed, yes.
Well, then you've landed in Richfield, and that's my home, and it was the first suburb in Minnesota, And we were there, and it was a beautiful, beautiful July 4th is when we have our beauty pageant for our community, and I'll never forget, it was just, you know, really... It was something because I prayed, you know, and I'm not a big prayer. I'm Lutheran, and we don't take the whole Jesus thing that seriously. So I'm not, but at a time like that, everybody prays. You know, it's like the foxhole, you know, there's nobody that doesn't believe in Jesus when you're sitting waiting for your time to go up and do your talent at the beauty pageant. And so I said, Jesus, help me. And just as I prayed that, it was interesting because just then, Trudy Olson, one of the other gals in the competition, big as a house, but real pretty face, real nice gal. And anyway, she was wearing fringe, which was a huge mistake because it was stretched so far. It looked like a picket fence on her. And she was twirling not one, not two, but three flaming batons when she lost control, took out the whole front row of contestants in a terrible fire. And anyway.
That sounds like a disaster.
Well, I don't know if you've seen Tavita burn, but it's not a slow burn, I'll tell you that. And I myself was the only contestant to stop, drop, and roll that day because, you know, when you're raised in a trailer, you know what to do in case of fire. You know, you're not getting out of a tiny little window. You got to figure out another way out of that trailer. So anyway, this is the only contestant left. We had, you know, nine of them, I think, were hauled off. Excuse me. Nine of them were hauled off to the burn unit and a couple to the morgue. So overall, it had a good ending. And I was the only contestant left. And actually, the day after...
Oh, so you were the only one left standing of the entire...
Yes, literally. Literally. I was it. In fact... A few of the judges even left, but you know, all of the audience for the most part.
So you were Miss Richfield.
It was me
by default.
Me and, you know, a custodian and a couple park workers. And anyway, but you know, one of the things you have to learn when you're pretty is not everyone supports that. You know, people don't support
true.
Beauty. You know,
there's a lot of prejudice against the beautiful.
Terrible. And so, you know, to reach down and, you know, pick up the tiara off the ground and the slightly trodden on sash and put it on myself was not a problem. I mean, I was able to do that day and realized that, you know, I was Miss Richfield. And actually the day after I was crowned Miss Richfield 1981, the Richfield City Council, the Richfield Chamber of Commerce, and A Mighty Fortress Is Our God Lutheran Church in Richfield all got together to create a fund to buy me a bus ticket to go someplace else. On the first day of my court. Yes, that was day one. And ever since then, Jim, for the last 30 years, because that was, of course, 1981, and it's been 30 years, every time I get back to Richfield, Minnesota, there on my the screen door of my trailer is taped another bus ticket to go someplace else. They love me. They love me, Jim.
They want you to travel.
They want, and it's a one-way ticket, of course, because, you know, it's the city and the church that are trying to save money. And yet, at the same time, you know, it doesn't matter wherever I am, they always seem to find money to send me home. So, you know, it
what
just
was
always
your,
works
What
out.
Was your talent in the pageant?
Well, I was going to do, my talent was going to be, I had a puppet called Chop Liver, and I was going to do a beautiful rendition of They Call the Wind Maria, which is a beautiful Broadway tune.
From Paint Your Wagon.
Probably.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. I was going to do Buttons and Bows, but there was a lot of words to that. And so this seemed to work really well.
It's a Doris Day tune. Buttons and Bows, yes.
Buttons and Bows.
Yeah, and rings and things and buttons and bows, yeah.
Yeah,
from
see,
the 50s.
I couldn't even get through all of that. I just couldn't. So I thought
it's
I'll
a
do
lot of buttons
they
and
call
a lot of
the
bows.
Wind Maria was worked out much better.
Actually, it's
me.
Mariah. Did you know that? It is the Call the Wind Mariah.
Well, that's not how it's printed. I'm sorry. You know, that's not... It is not... if you're really going to sing it the way it's written, then it's Maria. I'm sure it's about some Mexican somewhere. I mean, Paint Your Wagon. It's gotta be something in the third world. Anyway, so the point I'm making is that I was, unfortunately, during the fire and the mayhem that ensued, because, of course, everyone, just chairs and tables and everything went everywhere because, you know, these beauty queens were all... you know, lit up on fire, and they were running through the park, and my lovely puppet Chop Liver got terribly trodden on, and he was missing one eye, and his little cowboy hat fell off, and I thought, you know, my church was representing me and sponsoring me, and I was really representing Jesus. I can't use some handicapped puppet, you know? And so I threw him on the ground, and I just hoped that something would happen, and I said another prayer. Jesus, you know, I need a talent quick. Because, you know, even though pretty much everyone had left the park after the fire, I still wanted to complete the pageant. And so I did actually... decide to do a talent, and I thought I'll come up with something. And just then, just then. It was very Oprah. After I prayed, a voice came from the side of the stage and it said, Miss Richfield, Miss Richfield, 1981. I looked over and it was one of our firefighters, Hal, which is short for Cynthia, and a strong gal. And she came over and gave me a saw. A saw, of all things. A regular hand saw.
A regular hand saw.
That you would cut a piece of wood with. And I said, Hal, what am I going to do with this? And you know what she did? She showed me how to make music. Beautiful music. With this saw. I mean, it was just, and I couldn't believe it myself. And I sat down, and suddenly I was able to play. And to this day, every show that I do, I make sure that I always play the musical saw. And this particular show that I'm doing now is really outstanding. It's called 2012 We'll All Be Dead by Christmas. And it is exceptional.
Why did you call it that? Because we're all going to be dead. Because of
the Mexicans are going to kill us all. That's right around late December. So
because of the Mayan.
Don't Christmas shop. I mean, you know, you'll waste your time. I'm running up my cards on the 19th and then, you know, throwing caution to the wind. But it's, you know, it's an interesting show. Have you seen it?
Did you see it? Yes, I saw it. Yes.
Well, I've even improved it since you saw it. But I do play the musical saw. And I think the song, I don't want to announce what I play. But I do think the musical saw selection is really beautiful on that. Did you hear it? It's a beautiful song. Well, you have to come back and hear it.
What was the song that you played?
It's What a Wonderful World.
Yes.
It's a beautiful song.
You haven't lived.
It's a pretty song.
You haven't lived until you've heard a beautiful song played on a handsaw.
No, absolutely.
I mean, there
not.
Is a certain thing to be. I think that I would like to, you know, we know a lot of DJs. I would love to have somebody remix a handsaw.
Yes. That would be a great idea.
I know. Well, listen, after you won Miss Richfield,
yes.
What were some of your duties as Miss Richfield? Because, you know, Miss America always has her duties.
And yes.
Now, this could have been, you could have gone all the way to the Miss America pageant, correct?
Well, it would have been a long road, actually, because you have to, first of all, you have to win City of the Lakes. And that's where all the girls from the Twin Cities compete for the City of the Lakes. And
it's vicious.
It is, Jim, it's terrible. And, you know, a lot of these gals have their high school diplomas. You know, it's just, it's hard when you start out ahead in life, you know. My responsibilities as Miss Richfield 1981 initially involved getting out of town. That was the first thing. They bought me that bus ticket and they said, please go tell people about Richfield. And then, you know what they said? Just go. And they said, just go. Don't worry about us. We'll figure it out. But I was, I hoped to be Miss Minnesota, because that, of course, would be, and a girl can dream, but unfortunately, it was really vicious. You go to City of the Lakes, and then you have to go to about two more pageants, and you know, quite honestly, they're very expensive, and they expect you to wear different clothes at each of these pageants. Well, you know, I mean, honestly, I think that's just wasteful, you know? I mean, the gown that I wore for the Richfield pageant was the same gown I wore for the last five Miss Richfield pageants, because, you know, it took me 5 years
to
get
that title. Well, consistency is the, you know, you want to be consistent.
I've been competing since, you know, 1976. I wore the same gown every year, till I won in 1981. And anyway, so I'll be darned if I wasn't gone. I suppose it was a VFW veterans thing or something. I was somewhere else. When they named the Miss Minnesota that year. And anyway, since then, the Miss Minnesota 1981 got heavy, and she's not really used anymore. I don't think she's, you know, she does an occasional ribbon cutting. You know, she'll show up usually on the radio because she's so heavy. But yet, you know, I mean, she's not on fashionable podcasts like this, I can tell you that much.
I'm telling you, this is a find. This is
well,
a get.
You can see I wore my best outfit for crying out loud.
You do look really, really
thank you.
You look really great, especially considering you're on the radio. I mean, you know,
Well,
to me this is the hallmark of a real beauty queen.
Thank you.
Is
Jim.
That you do not
thank
show
you.
Up out of
ever.
Ever. And you have done this for 30 years. And I just think it's amazing.
It's
I mean,
true.
Do you go to the grocery store with your sash?
Well, interesting you should ask that, Jim. Yes, you know, I never take my sash off. And I actually, strangely enough, through a dairy farmer who, I don't know if you've ever seen artificial insemination, but they have these big, long plastic gloves. And I said, geez, I could use one of those. And I actually used two of those long artificial insemination gloves to cover my sash. And I shower in my sash even.
And you cover it with an artificial insemination glove?
Two.
This is not what I expected to hear today.
It's amazing. It's just, you know, because I just always want my sash on. And because, you know, I could drop dead in the shower, and then they come and find me. They don't know who I am. You know, I'm just some schmo in a shower at a Motel 5 in Hialeah. They don't know, you know, and if I have the sash on, they'll know.
Well, you know, you see a lot of these former beauty queens, like a former Miss America is on the 700 Club with Pat Robertson.
Oh, dear.
And a former Miss America is on Fox and Friends in the morning.
Oh.
And they're preaching conservative values. Have you ever thought that there might be a forum that you could probably do, you know, that would best serve your audience?
Interesting question, Jim. I've never really given it any thought at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, not
well, then
at all.
Let's move on.
But I will tell you this. I will tell you this. I know. I'm not a reader, Jim. I'm too busy living life to be reading about it. So I'm not up on all of, you know, these what do you say, issues? Is that what you call them? I don't know.
Like, are you familiar with who's the president? Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes, that black man's a president, out loud.
That's right.
That's big news. I mean, everybody knows that. But, I mean, I'm not stupid. Okay, just because I don't, you know, get really involved in politics, I know that, you know, it's President Osama, and, you know, it's all of these things. I know. But at the same time, I feel like there's so much joy to be spread in the world.
And that's what you can do.
You get wrapped up in those causes, it just gets to be a lot of, you know, line drawing. Like, you're on that side and I'm on this side. And I'm here to tell you, Jim, I need any job I can get. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I will work for whoever's willing to write the check. And if they'll pay me in cash, I'll do it for $100 less. You know? I mean, you know, I'm a working gal. And I don't know. I don't want to start drawing lines, you know? And when Michelle Bachmann called me to be there for a book signing, I was there, you know?
Because she's from Minnesota. Is she your representative?
No, she's not.
She's not.
As a matter of fact, I voted for her anyway. But no, she is not my representative. Unfortunately,
she doesn't seem that.
City of Minneapolis.
She doesn't seem that bright, Michelle Bachmann.
Well, you know, surprisingly, and I hope that we can keep this between us. You might want to edit this out. Even I don't think she's that bright, and I don't even know anything. And you know, but yet she's a nice gal, and she did write that book. You know, and she wrote, and I was there for a few of her book signings. It's a real easy job because it's not a real bright crowd. And all you have to do is just say, she's over there. You know, I just stood by the door, you know, and as people came in and I said, are you here for the book signing? They said, yes, I am. And I said, she's over there. And, you know, that's $4.95 an hour that I wouldn't have had otherwise, you know. I mean, that's, you know, $15 for, I took the bus there. It was 75 cents. You know, I mean, I came out ahead. So you have to, I just don't like drawing lines. I don't like the fact that we're on opposite sides.
I think we should all merge.
It's not helping us.
Miss Richfield brings people together.
We can have different opinions and get along, for crying out loud.
We're all on this earth a very short time.
Terrible.
But you have, I just want to say that you have managed to stretch out what I would call, you know, minimal talents.
Thank you.
And for many, many years.
Thank you, Jim. Are you just trying to sweet talk me here because I'm doing this for free? What are you doing?
I want to thank you, Miss Richfield.
And please don't touch me.
For talking to me. Just, you're very attractive.
Thanks. Just keep your hands to yourself. There we go. I feel better just having you on the other side of the table. Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Now I am talking with Miss Richfield has left the room. And I am talking with Miss Richfield's creator, who you never actually hear from, but I thought it would be great to hear from Russ King, who has been performing as Miss Richfield for how many years now?
I created Miss Richfield in, 1995, Jim. I created her to go to a party, a Miss America party in 1995.
Where?
My dear friend, Mark, and his partner, Clark, were fairly well-to-do guys, and they bought this beautiful home in this beautiful neighborhood.
In Minnesota?
In Minneapolis, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, you know, like one of the presidents of General Mills now, and they've since split up, but his partner's very successful too. They're really successful guys, and we're really philanthropic. And I met them through philanthropic work, through nonprofit work. And so they invited me to this party, and at this brand new house, or it's an old neighborhood, so it's a beautiful old house. And my roommate and I said, oh, it's Miss America party, let's go and drag. And we had never done drag before.
You'd never done drag?
Never.
Had it even entered your head?
Not really, although I kind of, you know, Jim, when I came out as a gay man, I did two things. I came out, my background's evangelical Christianity.
Really?
That's how I was raised, yeah. And so when I came out, I met a guy through casual sex who went to MCC, the MCC in Minneapolis Metropolitan Community Church. We're done having sex, right, in the bushes, right? We drive out to this sort of, you know, cool outdoor area, like hot, fabulous sex, right? On the way home, he goes, do you ever go to church? And he was like, no, I don't usually go. I haven't been to church in years. And he goes, oh, you should come to church sometime. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe I just picked this guy up off the street. We've had sex, and now we're talking about church. But I really like the guy. So that's really why I went to this church, is to see him. Well, I get plugged into this church, and it's filled with great people. It's filled with a lot of fun. It's very ecumenical. People come from liberal backgrounds, conservative backgrounds, whatever. We had a really good pastor at the time, Arlene Ackerman. She was amazing. And so I end up getting involved there, getting involved in an AIDS hospice, in volunteering on a regular basis there for like 5 years, did their newsletter, once a week, would spend an evening at the AIDS hospice running the hospice.
What were you doing for a living at this time?
At that point, I was my background is news reporting. I'm a journalist.
Oh.
And so I was working as a news editor for a small weekly out about an hour out of the cities in a beautiful lakes region in a resort community. It was beautiful. In fact, I would have settled out there had I had a partner. It was like stunning. It was so pretty. But I would come in, you know, 2-3 times a week, go to the Country Western Bar. That was the other way I came out, was church, an AIDS hospice, and then a Country Western Bar. Country Western Bar was super friendly. Oh, it was in the early 90s when country was big.
Sure.
Men and women danced together.
Just line dancing with no attitude.
It was so...
It wasn't a stand-in model place.
Couldn't be better. I mean, it could have been better. I just felt plugged in immediately. I could do it. So it was popular, you know, as opposed to discos that I would go to and feel like, oh my God, I just, you know, all the pretty boys are there and I have to stand back and it was all men. This was men and women. Men and women danced together. It was so much fun. So anyway, getting through all that, just to give you a background, however much of that you want to use. But what ended up happening is I ended up getting a job at the Minnesota AIDS Project. And actually, that's where I was working when I went to this party, because I started working there in 93 to 98, and this was about 95, and I went to this, party in drag, and then I got pictures, and afterwards, showed the pictures at work, because I'm working at the AIDS Project, so super friendly, you know, gay place. I was the communications
director. Was this drag that you went in at the party, was this pretty much what Miss Richfield looks like, or was it a little...
Well, I only had a bathing cap and a bathing suit and high heels,
okay.
So it's pretty simple.
Oh.
And then about a month, or no, that was September 95, and it was February of 96 before I really had the nerve to go to a place and ask to perform. But I just, after I'd done it once, I thought, truth be told, when I got done at that party, and, you know, we had a good time and laughed and had a lot of rides. It was a really fun evening. And I didn't really have a character. I was just me, you know. I showed the pictures at work, and somebody at work said, you should perform. You've got a great personality. You have a great way about you. You should perform. So I went to a bar in February of 96, and I got a chance to perform once. And then I performed like once in March, once in April, and then they needed somebody to MC their shows. And so I started MCing the shows, and I only worked in that bar for about 6 months. And a friend of mine said, you should really be doing cabaret. You should get out of the bar scene and go do cabaret. And by this point, the character was fairly well developed, you know, because I was MCing the show, so I had to talk. You know, a lot of the other queens just go out and lip sync. But I had to actually visit and talk with people and so forth. And that's where I started going out into the audience, visiting with people, which I do now in my shows. You know, I always chat with people in the audience. So I started doing cabaret in just 1 year later.
When did you start making your living as Miss Richfield?
Good question. My living really started with Miss Richfield 1981 in 2003. I quit my job as a communications director in 98, and it took me 5 years to really get it going. I mean, I did freelance writing, I did everything I could to keep the balls in the air, and as the internet bubble crashed, It took so much freelance writing work out.
Of course.
And all of these freelance writers were looking for jobs, and I just didn't have the... I really didn't have the intestinal fortitude. I just didn't really what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I was answering telephones. I was doing whatever I could do to keep food on the table. And when I went to Provincetown in 2003, I was about $30,000 in debt. My transmission in my old truck went out on the way out there. And it was just like, I thought, this has got to work, or I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. You know, or I'll just do it for fun, you know, or just do it for fundraisers or whatever. And then 2003, at the Crown and Anchor, that's what really, you know, kind of made it financially doable, financially realistic. And it infused enough cash into the... That summer, I made enough money to pay off that $30,000 debt.
Really?
And have a little money to go home. So, yeah. So
well, what I...
Awesome.
Let me just make an observation. As a comedian, you've obviously learned what you're doing over the years. Because I find you, as a performer, I find you much quicker on your feet than I am. I have to have more lines. I mean, I can riff, certainly, with the audience. But you really are really fabulous at it. I mean, I think you're a much better improviser than me.
Well, I have to say, Jim, I don't think I'm a better improviser than you, but because I've seen you work, and it's interesting how we see each other in different ways,
mm-hmm.
and I do not, it's so funny, because people are like, wow, your stuff with the audience is really great, and I always feel like that's the weakest part of the show mm-hmm. for me. It's just funny how, but you know what? Perceptions are great, and if people see that and they enjoy that,
well,
then I'll always keep doing it.
Well, everything we do is an illusion. You know what I mean?
Totally
it's like you, what you do is a complete illusion. That's why I think it's great for people to hear you as Russ.
Yeah,
because nobody ever hears that.
No.
And
no,
nobody knows behind the curtain, and we don't want to go too far. We don't want to get rid of too much illusion.
And the reality of it is
but there is a real person behind this.
And for me, and I think for most performers that do a character, there's an element of myself in that character. There's an element of Russ King in Miss Richfield there's a part of me that I can let out publicly that I otherwise probably would never let out. And the character suits me so well because I was raised so conservative that, like, we didn't go to movies, we didn't dance, we didn't listen to rock music, so I have no pop background. My popular background is zero. Like, we just didn't go to movies. I don't know old movies. I don't know music from the 80s. I don't know. And so, or 70s.
What is your parents' reaction now to Miss Richfield?
Well, you know what's cool? And this is a testament, and I hope people who listen, who are, like, on the fence about, do I come out to my family? Do I not come out to my family? I came out to my family right away when I came out to myself. I kind of went through a coming out thing. And man, when I came out to myself, I decided I'm coming out to my family. And I just have to do it right now. And if I don't do it right now, I may never do it. Because I know myself. And I might move to San Francisco or move to New York or whatever. And then, you know, they never really know what's going on. And because I did that, Jim, it freed me up to do all this. Because then, you know, once they know I'm gay, I have nothing to hide. So, you know, I started doing this character. Soon the newspaper wanted to do a feature article on me, front page of the, you know, Variety section. And so I had to talk to them about that. But I'd already talked to them about being gay. And that was tough. They're conservative. But you know what? It all worked out. And in the end, at first my parents didn't speak to me. And it was really tough. And my dad completely turned his back on me. And then, slowly but surely, you know, I continued to call. I continue to foster the relationship. And that's what I want gay people to hear, is that, you know, I see so many people who leave their families behind. And, you know, it took me 25 years to figure this out. If it takes my parents, you know, 25 years to figure it out, you know, then it's going
to
be a while.
Well, parents have to come out, too.
But that's okay. Yeah. They can take 25 years to figure it out. You know, it took me 25 years to figure it out.
Yeah.
But they might, but, you know, they figured it out much sooner than that. And sadly, my dad died in 2000. But because I had come out, and I'd come out in, when did I come out? I must have come out to him in 92. But because I did that, when he died, the last 2 years of his life, I was the closest to him I'd ever been.
That's great.
Yeah. But if I had not come out.
Oh, it would have been, yeah.
I mean, it would have been like, oh, sad, he died, okay.
Well, there would have been all these regrets that died with him.
And he didn't ever see Miss Richfield, even though I was performing.
Mm-hmm.
He never saw Miss Richfield, but since he's gone, let me rephrase that. He never saw Miss Richfield, but when I was first performing, I didn't have any money. I was broke. And so I wasn't taking cabs to the airport, you know, and nobody was paying for cabs to the airport. And I needed every dime I could get, right? And I was getting, you know, a couple hundred bucks for gigs here and there, you know. And so my father drove me to the airport. You know, he'd come at 2, you know, sometimes at like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning for these terrible morning flights, you know. And, because they were cheap. And he would drive me to the airport, you know, knowing I was going to perform as Miss Richfield someplace. And it was his way of accepting things. It was his way of saying, you know what? You know, I'm good with this. Never saw me. Never came to a show. Never wanted to come to a show, I don't think. But in his own way, he did that, which I think is really awesome and really amazing. And I think it's amazing that I had the, for whatever reason, the ability to see that. Like, I could appreciate it. Even then, I appreciated it. So when he died, it was like, I just had total peace. Had total peace with him leaving. Because we were on a good level. And since then, my mom's a huge Miss Richfield fan. That's she comes great. To everything.
That's great.
Everything. She's come to P-Town 3 times.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I want to wish you continued success with this. Because you're one of my favorite performers. And I just, you never fail to crack me up. And also...
That's a huge compliment.
In a way, you're doing a service to the audience by doing what you're doing. You know?
Well, I appreciate your kind words. And just to let you know what I think is the role of Miss Richfield, which I didn't say earlier, and I don't know if you want to try to plug this in or not, but is a woman said to me one time, I love your message. And I was taken a little back, you know, because some people bitch about my racial jokes and all the rest of it. And
well, Miss Richfield is slightly bigoted.
Oh, yeah, she's confused. You know, but she always thinks she's doing the right thing. And so I, you know, said to the woman, what's my message? That's interesting, what's my message? And she said, teaching tolerance through absurdity. I was like, oh my God, you know, and she was just some woman off the street that had seen my show in Provincetown. But yeah, she said, teaching tolerance through absurdity.
Well, it was like that one show you did where you delineated all the ethnic groups and that one of them was the Muslims.
Yes, the Muslims. You name your religion after a fabric. Hey, people are going to make fun.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you, Jim. It's awesome. Can't wait to read your book.
Yeah. Let's plug my book.
Hello.
Yes, let's plug my book, You'll Be Swell. For those of you who don't know, it is a novel that I wrote about a struggling actress and what it's like to struggle in show business. And it is hilarious, and it's wonderful, and I'm really proud of it. And people are loving it. You can get it on Amazon Kindle, on the iTunes store for your iPad. You can get it on barnesandnoble.com for the Nook. You can get it on the Sony e-reader. It's a really wonderful read. And one of the things I'm really grateful for is that people are telling me that they read it in like 3 days. That's the greatest thing. Some people have asked me, why do I play this same song at the end of the show? Well, this is one of my favorite songs by Sting, who's probably my favorite male pop star. And this is a song called Epilogue, in parentheses, Nothing About Me. And I thought that this was appropriate to play after an interview because what it says is you can rip me apart, you can go inside my brain, and you will still know nothing about me. Pour over everything.